is going on, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on numberfire.com. And of course, the Number Fire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look back at what all went down in week 10 of the 2018 NFL season, letting you know all the big takeaways from an NFL DFS perspective. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, week 10 is mostly in the books, and I think a lot of interesting takeaways from this slate, and a lot of exciting players are trending up. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing better than my DFS lineups did this weekend. I mean, I love Nick Chubb. I love David Johnson. I loved Aaron Jones. I guess I just whiffed on, you know, all the receivers. I played a lot of Travis Kelce.
Kareem Hunt was
suboptimal. I played a lot of,
Yeah, I wound up being okay because of, I think, Mitchell Trubisky, which is really makes me super sad.
That's ironic.
Yeah, I know, right? So I did well in NFL because of Mitchell Trubisky and did well in NASCAR because of Brad Keselowski, which honestly just makes me want to give back what I won because, like, it's just I don't like either of them. So, you know, whatever. It's fine. I'd be happier if they weren't in there, but I'm not going to complain too much.
Hey, it's better winning money with guys you don't like than playing some Chris Conley lineups and just...
Is it, though? But I think the good thing about this week is there are players I enjoy watching. I enjoy watching David Johnson. I enjoy watching Aaron Jones. And those players had really good weeks, and I don't think it's necessarily unsustainable. So I think this is a really fun week to recap. We're going to do that in just one second. But first, a lot more coming up this week on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Got a PGA podcast, final one before a bit of a break for the PGA Tour. That is on Tuesday. NASCAR podcast, final one of the year. If you want to hear me give bad takes about Brad Keselowski, that is on Wednesday for the championship race in Homestead this weekend. And our week 11 NFL preview podcast is on Thursday. We will have a Thanksgiving breakdown as well, whenever that is. I don't honestly know what Thanksgiving is, to be fully honest with you. But whatever that is, we're going to have a Thanksgiving podcast for the three-game slate there. So make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, the TuneIn app, and now Spotify hosting the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. So if you want to go from your hardcore rock and think, or you're listening to Beyonce and think, man, this reminds me of Jim and Brandon, I should check out the Heat Check. You can just go straight from listening to Beyonce to listening to the Heat Check all on Spotify. Beyonce might not be on Spotify anymore. I just realized that. Regardless, Taylor Swift, we'll go with that instead. Just search for the Number Fire.
Can we go with Lady Gaga instead?
What's that?
Can we go with Lady Gaga instead of
Taylor Swift? I'd be okay with that. I can bump Lady Gaga. So no complaints there for me personally. I didn't see that movie she was in, but I can still... I like her music.
The documentary?
Was it a documentary?
It's like 5'2" or something.
No, it's called A Star Is Born with the guy who played the raccoon in Guardians of the Galaxy. Bradley Cooper, I think that's his name. Anyway,
we're
exposing our pop culture deficiencies. So let's talk about Panthers at Steelers. And Brandon, the Steelers came out and just laid down a total butt-whipping on the Panthers in this one. What can we take away from this game?
Yeah, I think this qualified as a drubbing. I know the Panthers have that drum that they pound in us.
I think their hashtag on Twitter is pound away, and they might want to retire that one.
I mean, so it was a blowout. That much is certain, but, you know, that the problem there is that leaves us with some odd usage to kind of look through. But I'm going to start with the Steelers and James Conner, who was limited to a season-low 41% snap rate. He had left kind of intermittently throughout the game, starting in the first half. Turns out that he had a concussion, which kind of leaves him questionable for Week 11 against the Jaguars, but the team seems pretty optimistic about his status. If he plays, we know what to expect by now, you know, assuming that we can consider him 100% going into week 11. But if he were to sit, just know that Stephen Ridley handled 8 carries and had a target while playing just 10 snaps, 17%. Mm-hmm. That was Jalen Samuels, who played 17 snaps, which worked out to be 29%, who got a little bit more of a boost. He had 5 carries and 4 targets, including a receiving touchdown. He was a 5th-round pick. He's got some interesting athleticism. I would pencil him in as the priority, but I still don't think that we need to go there, even on a 10-game main slate in Week 11. As for the passing game, Ben Roethlisberger certainly was spot on. He completed 22 of 25 passes for 328 yards and 5 touchdowns, so you know, more touchdowns than incompletions. Just 3 deep attempts for him, so passes traveling at least 16 yards downfield, as we define that at number fire. The touchdowns helped overcome the limited volume for the receivers. Antonio Brown had 96 yards and a touchdown on his 6 targets. Brown has a 23.4% target share in 3 games since their bye, which kind of isn't very good. That's not really high enough for his price, but he does have 37.5% of the team's combined deep and red zone targets in that split, which is a pretty elite rate. I think the league leader is around 40% right now, Corey Davis. So the high leverage looks still going to Antonio Brown. So that works for us for DFS. Juju Smith-Schuster had 5 targets to rank him 2nd on the team. He had a 75-yard touchdown, but just 90 total yards, so not much other than that one big play. But that's kind of all he needed. He's down to an 18.7% target share since the bye, 25% of the deep and red zone targets. So he's a clear secondary option, and whenever you put him in a matchup like he's going to get next week against the Jaguars, I think I can be a little bit concerned there. You know, Juju's pretty not game script, but matchup dependent for me. Vance McDonald was the only other Steeler, along with Brown, Juju, and Jalen Samuels, to get more than 2 targets. He had 4, but his snaps have been up and down, so he's not really in the firm DFS tier for me. And again, they played at the Jaguars in Week 11. Jaguars clearly trending down, but we'll talk more about that game, I'm sure, on Thursday. I think we can kind of throw this game out for the Panthers, though. Cam Newton threw 29 times for 193 yards, 2 touchdowns, but had a pick 6 in there. Despite trailing pretty early, just 3 deep passes for 14 yards for Cam. He's been struggling on his deep balls for most of the year. This is his first game with fewer than 18 fantasy points. Didn't play the full game here. But, you know, at Detroit in Week 11, I'm back on Cam without much concern at all. I think that
Cam indoors?
Yeah, we can buy in there. Yeah. Christian McCaffrey, still amazing. He had played 95% of the snaps in this blowout, combined for 19 opportunities, 5 of which were targets. Scored twice on his 5 catches, once on a goal line carry. He's had back-to-back 30-point games on FanDuel. He has 5 total touchdowns in that span. He has 7 scores. In his past 5 games, he's a lock for 95% of the snaps. He's scoring now, so he's someone I want to buy into a lot, as usual. Greg Olsen led the team in targets with 6, had 2 or 3 deep targets. He's got an 18% target share since his return, which is 3rd on the team. 18% of the red zone targets, also 3rd. Over the past 3 games, 5 players for the Panthers are between 13 and have at least a 13.5% target share. So it's kind of evenly distributed. And I mean, even someone like DJ Moore, he led the team in snap rate, but the targets just aren't really there for these guys. But, you know, still against the Lions in Week 11, it's easy to want to buy in to this offense. But I think I'm sticking with Cam and McCaffrey first and foremost.
So do you think that because things are so spread out, you're inclined to just kind of forego the wide receivers, or in what seems to be a plus matchup and a good game environment, do you plan on taking stabs at guys like Funchess, like Moore, and like Olsen?
Yeah, it's going to be more of a stab and hope right situation, because like DJ Moore's been playing a lot of snaps, but just hasn't necessarily been getting heavily targeted. We know what he can do whenever he gets targets and touches, but it's not something you can bank on. So Right. Even in a great matchup like this, they're not cash game plays,
Sure. But
they're firmly in play for tournaments given the matchup and given that they are playing snaps, at least, you know, someone like DJ Moore, Devin Funchess, but again, not cash game plays or anything like that.
Right. I agree. They're not cash game plays, but they're also not totally off the board just because they're playing snaps. So I think that's encouraging, even though they can't be a part of your core. They can't be cash game plays, they can still be viable game stack plays. So I think that's certainly an encouraging thing for me with those guys, even though I agree that it's pretty much just Cam McCaffrey, kind of the way to go with this offense. In this week's number fire free roll, it was MANDM1122 taking home the top prize with a score of 192.50. They had Drew Brees stacked with Michael Thomas while also getting big days out of David Johnson, Aaron Jones, Melvin Gordon, and Corey Davis. For that, they get 3 free months of Number Fire Premium, along with a boatload of FanDuel points they can use on entries on FanDuel. To get entered, get yourself Number Fire Premium and free FanDuel points for free entries. Check out the Thursday preview podcast on Thursday for week 11. Listen for the URL. We'll do it in the first read of the podcast, which will be after the injuries. So don't have to listen too long. You get annoyed with our voices. It'll be in there pretty much around the 15-minute mark. So check out the URL. I'm trying to give this away, man. Trying to really hard push this down your throat. Check it out in week 11 on the Thursday preview podcast. Speaking of shoving things down throats, the Jets. Oh boy, the Bills. Yeah, not good. It was the Shady McCoy game here, and it probably wasn't as unpredictable as it seemed. I didn't use him, but I think you could have made a case for him. We talked last week about how Chris Ivory had been taking work away from McCoy. Ivory did practice Thursday, Friday, but he was inactive on Sunday. And this was a game where the Bills could, in theory, keep it close, and they did more than that. It's not to say that you should have used him, because tying assets to Matt Barkley is suboptimal for DFS, but it wasn't totally off the wall. McCoy did still cede some work to Marcus Murphy, but a lot of that was later in the game. So if Ivory continues to sit, I think that McCoy is in play if they can keep things close. Don't know how often that'll happen. They have a bye week. Josh Allen's coming back, which will help them for sure. That is an upgrade for the offense, but still, I don't think he was totally off the wall to use Shady McCoy there. Zay Jones had a pretty big day. He had 11 of 26 targets, and he looked really good, too. And he's looked good when he's gotten volume this year. Zay Jones had 3 deep targets. He had 3 in the red zone. The problem is that all of this has happened, his semi-resurgence with Josh Allen's sideline. Jones tends to run routes closer to the line of scrimmage, so it makes sense that his target totals would go up with a bomber like Allen sidelined. So I think I'm going to initially be very wary of Jones when Allen does come back. But it's pretty clear that Jones has talent, and he is the most talented pass catcher that they've got. So there's actually some upside here if Allen decides to utilize him. We just kind of have to see if that will happen first. I will be watching Zay Jones closely. This is the first time all year I've had any hope for a Bills pass catcher. So Zay Jones on the radar, just can't quite use him yet. The Jets got destroyed. Man, they're going to be hard to assess. They were down their starting center, their starting quarterback, and their top wide receiver. So I think they will be better after their bye once people are healthier. They were just too banged up to really compete here. This game also showed that even with a decent snap rate for Elijah McGuire last week and this week, the backfield is still a full-blown committee. Isaiah Crowell had 7 carries, McGuire had 6, and Trenton Cannon had 4. The targets were 6 for McGuire, 4 for Cannon, and 2 for Crowell. So I'll spread out across the board. McGuire did lead the team in snaps again. He was at 57%. Crowell was at 34%. And Cannon played 23%, though Cannon actually had more snaps lined up as a wide receiver than he did in the backfield, according to Pro Football Focus. So I think until this team either gets better, which I think they will, or someone separates from the pack, none of these guys are viable for DFS. You can take stabs at committees on good offenses. This is not a good offense. So encouraging signs from McGuire, but not enough for me to use him in DFS. Again, no Robbie Anderson for the Jets, so it's kind of hard to take too much out of the pass catchers. But it was good to see Quincy Enunwa get 8 targets. He and Anderson should both, at least to some extent, be in play after the bye week, getting Sam Darnold back, who I think has been better than perception, honestly. But I do think that, they can be in play after their bye week once Spencer Long gets healthy and once Sam Darnold gets healthy. Brandon, I want to talk to you about Zay Jones. I am interested in him, but also wary of what he will do once Josh Allen becomes a passer. What's your take on Zay Jones right now?
Yeah, I kind of like Zay Jones just from like a career long trajectory standpoint, but it's not really the right fit. Like you've been, like you pointed out with Josh Allen, and that worries me. And I mean, frankly, it's, I don't know what we're gaining by chasing Zay Jones. I know what we could be kind of losing, and that's rostering someone who just doesn't get involved in a strugglesome pass offense. But yeah, I mean, I want to take a wait and see approach, and I think that I can be afforded that opportunity for Zay Jones.
All right, let's move on here to Washington and Tampa Bay. Super weird game, and I felt good because Washington scored just 16 points against the best off or the worst defense in the league. So I think the offensive line narrative did play out, but still, Tampa Bay could not win this game. Brandon, what'd you see here between Tampa Bay and Washington?
Yeah, so Tampa Bay outgained Washington 502 to 292, but lost 16-3. I think this was. I probably should have jotted this down, but it was like the first time that an offense has ever had 450 yards and scored three or fewer points. So, and then it was announced after the game that head coach Dirk Koetter called plays in this one rather than offensive coordinator Todd Monken.
How was Todd Monken the problem?
I don't know. I mean, their offense averaged nearly 28 points per game.
Also, if you're Dirk Koetter, why not keep that to yourself if your offense scored 3 points?
Yeah, he said that it was basically just the problems were trickling down through the offense even. And he actually said it was his, you know, quote, own reasons, end quote, for,
right,
for
buddy.
Calling plays. So that kind of, I guess.
This team makes me mad.
Yeah. So the kind of usage in everything that we've seen from Tampa Bay, which has already been split up between the quarterback usage, it's going to be kind of hard to, you know, stick to any trends that we see if they're going to just change play callers and especially get these results from Dirk Koetter. So Ryan Fitzpatrick had 2 picks, but also threw for over 400 yards on 41 attempts, almost 10 yards per attempt. Ended up with just 0.58 expected points after 2 sacks, according to NumberFire's metrics. So, you know, that's just not good. DeSean Jackson and Jaquizz Rodgers led the team with 8 targets. Rodgers actually had 102 yards. Kind of came out of nowhere. Chris Godwin also topped 100 yards, getting to 103 on his 7 targets. Only Mike Evans, who had 6 targets, also got past 3, so kind of concentrated usage here. Evans and Jackson led with 3 of the deep targets, and since a week 6 bye, only Evans at a 22% target share is above 16%. So, I mean, he's the clear top dog for this offense, but there are a lot of other mouths to feed who actually get kind of reliable workloads. Evans actually has 31% of the combined red zone and deep targets in that split as well, which is good, not great. And the snaps for the Buccaneers receivers were weird. Nobody played more than 80%. Evans and Humphreys were, Adam Humphreys that is, were around 80%, but DeSean Jackson was at 64%. And Chris Godwin, despite those 7 targets and 103 yards, played just 49%. So it's hard to chase Godwin. It's hard to kind of chase anyone other than Mike Evans still.
I think Godwin's fantasy output is inversely proportional to his snap rate. That's what I've just said.
Yeah, that's it's frustrating, and it's really hard to recommend him or even, you know, feel confident that he's going to get those targets because he just plays few snaps. And speaking of, you know, kind of few snaps and having a dud, that's what happened to O.J. Howard finally. He had played 65% of the snaps but saw just 2 targets. His usage has been, from a volume standpoint, it's been pretty low, but he's been producing. That did not happen in this game. Again, just 2 targets for him. The backfield here, I think, is worthless. Rodgers had those 8 targets but 1 carry. Peyton Barber had 13 attempts but 1 target. Barber played 48% of the snaps, according to fantasydata.com. Rodgers was at 38%, so I can't go there. Even though the Bucs do face the Giants, who will be on a short week, but with Dirk Koetter calling plays, it's hard to trust anything that we've seen all year, and I haven't seen enough from this one game to have much confidence at all. For Washington, they averaged 5.2 yards per play in a win, because of course they did. Adrian Peterson had 19 carries for 68 yards, 3.6 per carry, a 32% rushing success rate, according to NumberFire's metrics, well below the league average of about 41%. Peterson's clearly one of the most game script dependent plays in the league. He's been scoreless in 5 of his past 6 games, keeping him to 11.2 or fewer FanDuel points in those games. So he has pretty much no upside unless he scores, and Washington is not really a good bet to score, you know, a whole lot of touchdowns in a single game. And he's actually played fewer, or he played fewer than 60% of the snaps, and he's maxed out at 60.3%. So you just, you kind of take what you get from Adrian Peterson, and he's really touchdown or bust. And that volume that they want to give him kills the passing game. Alex Smith threw 27 times, just 178 yards and a touchdown for 12.7 FanDuel points against pretty much the most generous pass defense that there is. Smith has fewer than 20 FanDuel points in every game. He has topped 292 yards just once, maxing out at 306. You can't play Alex Smith in DFS. The target leaders here were Jordan Reed at 6, Maurice Harris at 5, and Josh Doctson and Capri Bibbs at 4. Harris led with 52 yards. Doctson scored. And since their week 4 bye, nobody has even a 20% target share or 20% of the deep looks. Jordan Reed leads in that span. He's at 19.5% of the targets. I mean, Josh Doctson played 78% of the snaps. Maurice Harris played 66%, even without Jamison Crowder. So it's just really hard to buy into this kind of offense overall, but especially the pass offense. With these low snap rates, low efficiency, I can't really get excited about them. They do host the Texans off a bye in week 11. So that kind of gets, yeah.
Just go at it again. Bucks defense didn't quite pay off, but I don't care. That's fine. Name that price for Mike Evans on the road against the Giants. Pretty bad usage day for him. Did he get 3 deep targets still? Where is the price for you on Mike Evans, who seems to be the top guy here in this receiving corps?
I think I said like last week that he wouldn't dip below 7,000. I would still pay somewhere in that like 7,300 range. I think that's what he was this week, actually.
He was 75 this week.
I would go up to 75 again.
Okay. I think I'm down to 72.
Yeah, I would want him closer to 7,000.
He's 74. I think that's appropriate, I guess. Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's exactly. They're not going to make Mike Evans less than even 7,000. Right. So
If you're looking for an OJ Howard bounce back, he is $6,300. So
that's just too pricey.
Yeah, for his volume, it is. I mean, I've been on him for a long time, but once he was up to 65 last week, I got off pretty quick there.
Yeah, I mean, the volume has just not really been there all year. Howard's just been getting like deep looks and super red zone efficient looks.
Yeah,
and so you can't bank on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Let's move on here to the Saints, the Bengals, and the Saints just rolled in this one. It was not fair, and I think it really shows both how good they are and good enough to play outdoors as well, but also how bad this Bengals defense might be right now. With that said, this game does come with some concerns for New Orleans. Left tackle Terron Armstead, he's been among the best offensive linemen in the league this year. He left with a shoulder injury, did not return, took his pads off, jogged to the locker room, and didn't come back. He was ruled out pretty quickly with a shoulder injury. We would actually need to downgrade this offense if he were to miss time. They played well without him. I think he missed the entire second half. But it would be a downgrade for the offense if one of the best left tackles in football were to miss time. At running back, Mark Ingram had a bit of a revival, but kind of still the same old, same old. He was just more efficient. 13 carries and 3 targets. He's still not usable until his price comes down. So for me, it's still status quo for Ingram. Alvin Kamara had 12 carries and 5 targets. He scored twice to buoy his production. He played 45% of the snaps with Ingram at 41%. I think the big concern I have here is upside in games that aren't close. Kamara did come through with 2 touchdowns, and that can happen with his red zone usage. He's getting the off and also the offense he's playing on. But given the price, I kind of think it's a little bit thin for me outside of a home shootout environment. That said, that's exactly what he gets in week 11 facing Philadelphia at home. So I'm not saying don't use Alvin Kamara there. I'm saying I feel good about not using him in week 10. I didn't use him. It didn't work out, but I still think the process was there. The Saints threw 27 times. 8 of those went to Michael Thomas. He had no deep targets, but 5 of those targets were in the red zone for Thomas, and he's had more deep targets since Ted Ginn came out. Thomas is up to 29% of the red zone targets this year, and Kamara is at 31%. Thomas does get a bit shaky if they're big favorites, but he paid off here, and his upside is huge in close games, so Michael Thomas still worth his price very much so. No targets for Tre'Quan Smith. He did lead the team in wide receiver snaps. We should probably target him only in games where they're forced to throw quite a bit, and even then, he's going to be a bit shaky. He could be in play against the Eagles because he's at home, and they are a competent offense despite what happened Sunday night, so we'll see there. But I definitely think that is not an overly desirable role to have. On the Bengals side, this game really did show the importance of A.J. Green. Andy Dalton threw two picks on 20 attempts for 153 yards. We've seen his splits take a hit without A.J. Green in the past, and I do think we need to downgrade Dalton until Green is back pretty significantly. He's kind of like the quarterback of this offense from a line perspective, from a Vegas perspective. John Ross led the team with six targets. Four of those were deep, and one of them was a bunny touchdown. He had four red zone targets in the first three games this year, so that touchdown wasn't a total fluke. He also had a short touchdown against Indy in week one, so we probably need to keep him on the radar as long as Green is out, but he needs to stay cheap in order to be on that radar. Tyler Boyd had just four targets. That's the fewest he has had all year. It was on just 20 total attempts, but still, I think that it's pretty clear here that Boyd benefits from Green taking away coverage. If the price comes down on Boyd, we can buy back in, but I think for me, that is a prerequisite for investing. I need to see the price come down before I can use Tyler Boyd, because I think that he does get a ding when coverage can focus on him. With Giovanni Bernard back, Joe Mixon still had 11 of 13 running back carries. Two targets, Gio had three. Mixon played 67% of the snaps with Bernard at 28%. But Andy Dalton played just 86% of the snaps too, so I think that Mixon's snap rate would have been higher if the game had been closer. And I think his role was similar to what it was when Gio Bernard was out. So Mixon does get downgraded with the team's efficiency going down until Green comes back. But I think that the role, the pure role perspective here for Mixon, still very much okay. Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Saints. I didn't use Alvin Kamara in week 10. I'm leaning towards saying the process in that was okay, given that he was 100 cheaper than Melvin Gordon. Where do you stand on the process with Alvin Kamara right now?
I don't really have any particular issues with Kamara. I know that the usage is, from a volume standpoint, not anything elite, but we just know how efficient this offense is overall, so that helps. We also know how good Kamara is at just creating yards and opportunity for himself once he actually gets the ball in his hands. So, you know, the 12 carries and five targets for Kamara in this offense, it's worth a lot more than 12 carries and five targets for someone like an Adrian Peterson. Not that Peterson would get five targets, but that helps a lot. And whenever he's tied to a team that is expected to score about 30 points every game, I'm more okay with the volume and snap concerns when it comes to someone like Kamara. Obviously, that kind of goes without saying. If you're asking me what price I'm willing to pay, I'm still willing to pay close to $9,000 for him. I just happen to be on Kareem Hunt as a huge favorite and Melvin Gordon against the Raiders this week. So it wasn't necessarily that I didn't like Kamara.
Right.
It's that I liked other players more.
Well, that's where I was at too, because it was all about his price. He was barely cheaper than Hunt and Gordon. I thought they were both significantly better plays. Gordon did outscore him again, even though I don't think he scored twice. I think he scored only once. And Hunt flopped. So that didn't quite work out. But I think given the fact that he played 45% of the snaps and had 12 carries and five targets, if you had told me that for his price, I would have faded him every time. So I think I'm still okay with how it went down, but I'm also a little weird when it comes to him. Name that price for Kareem Hunt in week 11 at home against Philadelphia, which I think is the ideal environment to use him.
For Kamara at that price, I'm still paying about $9,000.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where I'd be too, and he's $8,900.
Yeah, so I'll be playing.
He's very much an environment-dependent guy for me, and this is a good one for him, so I think that's a fair price for him, but it is a very much a game-by-game basis for me with Alvin Kamara. Let's talk about Kareem Hunt now, Brandon. Let's go to the Cardinals and the Chiefs, recap this game. And it kind of seemed like the Chiefs were on cruise control for most of the game, didn't need to do too much. And we'll talk about this in a second, big day for David Johnson. So what did you see from this game?
Yeah, I mean, it was closer, you know, from at least a score standpoint than we probably all would have expected. It was 26-24 win for the Chiefs. You know, Patrick Mahomes at 9,800 really needs to come through big time. But he still scored 20 FanDuel points, but just barely. He had 249 yards, two touchdowns, added 21 yards on the ground, seven deep attempts for him, which is a 25% deep rate, which is above league average of about 18%. And he'd kind of been low there the past few games. So I have no particular worries on Mahomes. He's just always, can you afford him is really all it comes down to. Without Sammy Watkins, it was Tyreek Hill day, despite being at home where he rarely scores touchdowns, which I think is just random. But Hill caught 7 of 10 targets for 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 4 deep targets, 2 red zone targets, and on the year he's got a 28.3% deep target share combined with red zone targets, you know, those high leverage looks, which is a pretty high rate given that he's attached to the league's best passing offense. Travis Kelce also took a back seat here. I had 7 targets, 6 catches, 46 yards. And, that's okay, but just not worth the price of $8,000 on FanDuel. He was the only Chief with at least 30 receiving yards other than Tyreek Hill. Kelce leads the team with 26% of the targets and a 25% red zone share on the year. His 7.6 FanDuel points this week, that was his lowest mark since week 1 when he got shut out by the Chargers. He's always in play if you have the cash, but we know that maybe the Chiefs need to kind of take the foot off the gas a little bit to save themselves for the playoffs. Kareem Hunt didn't really come through. He did handle a lot of the work, had 16 of 18 running back carries, but lost the goal line score to Spencer Ware that really hurt him. Over the past 5 games, Hunt has 9 of 13 carries from inside the 10 among the Chiefs running backs. So still good, but certainly not. He's a candidate still to be vultured by Spencer Ware for a touchdown. After playing his 2 highest snap rates the past 2 weeks, Hunt still played 73% of the snaps, which rank him 4th on the full year. So he's been playing elevated snaps of late. So I think you have to kind of take what you can get whenever you have someone who's playing 75%+ of the snaps on the league's best offense. If you're looking for reasons to be worried about Kareem Hunt, you can look to the 2 targets. He had 2 targets for the 2nd straight week. That's coming off of a 3-game stretch with 6 targets in every game. The snaps are there, but the pass game volume has been a bit declining the past 2 games. But, I mean, frankly, this game didn't change my perception on any of the Chiefs' main DFS assets. I'm still in on Hunt, Kelce, Hill, Watkins when he's healthy, and, of course, Pat Mahomes. But the Chiefs do play off of the main slate. They're Monday night in Mexico City against the Rams. That game is actually going to be an island game worth watching. The Cardinals here lost tackle Justin Pugh in the 3rd quarter. Pugh was already dealing with a broken hand. Their line has just not given Josh Rosen much time at all. Rosen got shut down again, throwing 39 times for 208 yards. So that's 5.3 yards per attempt. Just barely got to 10 fantasy points. He's been hard to get excited about in year 1. I mean, I still played him, but what are you going to do there? I need to learn my lesson. But he did focalize the volume here. Larry Fitzgerald had 10 targets. David Johnson and Ricky Seals-Jones had 9. Christian Kirk had 6. Only Johnson got past 51 yards, though. He had 85 yards and a touchdown. The Chiefs are a really tough per-target receiver defense, so we can somewhat give the lack of efficiency here. And over the past 2 games with Byron Leftwich as the offensive coordinator, Larry Fitzgerald has a 30.6% target share. He has 4 of the 9 red zone attempts as well. So that's great usage. Arrow for me is pointing up on Fitzgerald. In that 2-game sample, David Johnson, Christian Kirk, and Ricky Seals-Jones all have an 18% target share. That puts Fitz way out in front of the rest of the team. And against the Raiders in Week 11, I like Fitz as a bye. But, yeah, the real story here for this offense is just David Johnson. He had 21 carries in addition to that receiving work, 98 yards on the ground, and a touchdown played 77% of the snaps. He played 53 snaps in the backfield, just three out wide. So not necessarily getting out wide more, but definitely getting more involved. Mm-hmm. He can be this team's lead receiver and the lead rusher again. So the arrow pointing up for DJ and against the Raiders next week. I mean, yeah.
He had he doubled his deep targets for the year this week. He got one, but you know, I'll take it. And he gets so much work in the red zone that I think it kind of makes the offense more palatable because he gets such an immense share of that. So I want you to name that price for both David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald at home against Oakland next week.
Okay, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I love both of these guys. They're two of my favorite players in the league, but they're still tied to an offense that hasn't really shown a huge ceiling. So for David Johnson, I'm willing to pay probably about 82. Okay. I would hope that he'd be closer to 8,000. For Fitz, I would say 6,500.
Ooh, wow. We were almost literally the exact same. I said 8,000 and 65. And the answers are, drum roll, please. $7,900 for David Johnson.
Okay. I can do that.
I can live with that. And Larry Fitz, $5,900.
Ooh. That's a $100 price increase.
Yeah, he's DJ got 1,000. Larry Fitz got 100. So, yeah, I'm going to be in on this Cardinals offense next week. Can you talk yourself into Josh Rosen there?
Because I played him this week.
Okay, so I view Kansas City as being a different defense at home than on the road. Now Arizona's at home. They're in a controlled environment, and they're facing a defense that has given up. So I would give a thumbs up to Josh Rosen. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have so many Rosen and Rosen Johnson and Rosen Fitzgerald stacks. The problem is just running it back with the Raiders.
I'm not going to do that. I've run it back with every quarterback lineup I've done this year, pretty much. I refuse to run it back with any Raiders. but Rosen's 65 again. So I think, like, let's go, man. Let's ride. They're back. We're happy. I think that this is a pretty good day, and I can get pretty excited about this one. With the NFL, NBA, and NHL all in full swing, NumberFire Premium has you covered. With award-winning DFS tools, advanced stats, and expert content, Premium has everything you need to dominate across all three sports. If you are a new user, try it out and get your first month for only $7.95 with the promo code CLUTCH. That is promo code CLUTCH. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details. numberfire.com/premium. And the promo code again, CLUTCH, CLUTCH. Moving on to the Patriots and the Titans. When I was thinking out the pros and cons of Marcus Mariota, I did not think a 24-point win and just grotesquely positive game script would be a negative for him. But here we are. He's too good for his own good. Over the past three games, Mariota has added 0.35 net expected points per dropback. If that were his full season number, it would rank sixth in the league. It's making him a better play for DFS, but it also gives a lot more juice to the other players in this offense, specifically Corey Davis. We'll talk about in just a second, but Mariota to me is legit. Deion Lewis did not have a great fantasy day, but his usage was solid again. He had 20 carries and two targets. Derrick Henry had 11 carries, but five of those came when the Titans were icing the game late. He did look good, but the game was effectively over, and I think the Patriots were not trying by that point. And Lewis still played 75% of the snaps, while Henry is at 25%. Lewis would have been a better asset if the game script had been more neutral, and I think that he is still a guy I feel good about going forward. The other guy I love here, I think, is Corey Davis. He was the only player to get more than three targets, and he had 10. Davis, for the full season, now has 31% of the overall targets, 51% of the deep targets, and 36% of the red zone targets. Like, just from a straight-up usage perspective, from a rate perspective, he might have the best usage in the league for a wide receiver. Again, I'm not talking about, like, you know, overall volume. I'm talking about per target numbers. He might be number one alongside DeAndre Hopkins. So their schedule loosens up a bit over the next three games, so we could see an explosion here for Corey Davis. The Patriots have a bye week, and they will need it because they're a bit banged up. Julian Edelman and left tackle Trent Brown both left due to injuries. Edelman seemed to be okay. Saw him talking to reporters after, and he looked like he was fine. Brown's back was hurt. He was also dealing with an illness. The back injury will be something to watch, and it would be a big downgrade to Tom Brady if Brown were to miss time. Sonny Michel came back, and he cut into James White's workload. It was a script that heavily favored White, but he had just one carry and eight targets, while Michel had 11 carries and no targets. The snaps still did pretty heavily favor White, 67% to 26%. But even 67% in this game script is pretty disappointing, honestly. Michel will have a bye to get healthier, and he should be back to what he was earlier in the year. They will have better scripts going forward, and that could be a negative for White. So his viability will depend on his price after their bye week. At wide receiver, things were super concentrated with Edelman and Josh Gordon getting 12 targets apiece. Nobody other than White had more than two targets. Gordon had five deep targets. He has 10 deep targets the past two games. Edelman had a deep target and one in the red zone. Rob Gronkowski figures to be back after their bye week, which throws a pretty big wrench into this this passing game. Gordon has had huge usage when Gronk has been out, and a bit more muted with Gronk in there, while Edelman has been more static, I think. So I would not be out on Gordon, but Gronk's return would be a downgrade for him based on the uses that he got in this game. Let's talk about the Titans, though, Brandon. I am fully in on everyone. Basically, Mariota, Lewis, Corey Davis, do you have any lingering concerns about this offense?
Concerns? Not really. It's more, I mean, there was the Corey Davis week when they played the Eagles that I bought low on, and it really helped out. I haven't really been able to get myself there since, but if you combine a player's deep targets and red zone targets, which are both high leverage looks, Davis has 44.7% of the combined Titans red zone and deep targets. He's the only player with more than 39% of his team's workload, and he's up at almost 45%. So the workload has just been fantastic for Davis. He also had three end zone targets to lead week 10 this week. So
name that price, pointing week up. 11 against Indy on the road in a dome.
I would be comfortable. I would start to get a little nervous after 6,800, I think.
He is $6,200.
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
Marcus Mariota is 71.
That's like early season John Brown pricing.
Deion Lewis is 59. I may not have a lineup that doesn't have a Titan in it. This is going to go very badly, but I don't care. Like we were talking before about like exciting players. Like Marcus Mariota is one of my favorite players in the league. And I was so sad that he was terrible earlier this year, but now he's actually doing well, and I get to use him in a dome. Like, this is great. I'm excited.
Yeah. And now we get to talk about your actual favorite quarterback.
Go ahead. It's Lions at Bears. Mitchell Trubisky. He won me money, so I can't be bad. Like, I can't – I'm not going to come around on him, but, you know.
You gotta dig your feet in. Dig your heels in.
I refuse. I learned that lesson last year with Carson Wentz after about week five. It's like, okay, he's proved me wrong. I just need to eat some crow here.
Yeah, I mean, he carved up the Lions. He's been very good for pretty much most of his games. He's had some down games, but it's been a lot of good of late. He was 23 of 30 in this one for 355 yards, three touchdowns. He threw deep 12 times. He completed six of those for 207 yards and two scores. He has thrown it deep on 27% of his attempts since week three. That's a fantastic rate for not only a quarterback, but for his receivers, because it adds just extra efficiency, not efficiency, but just upside in each target.
It actually does add efficiency too. Like deep targets are more efficient.
But from like a catch rate standpoint, it's not the case, but
from
whenever
an expected
you do
points
catch
perspective, if like yeah. That's why Trubisky's been better, is because they're letting him throw it deep. So like I can't be that mad that he's doing well. Like if the process is there for him to be improving. So
yeah. Anyway, so
remember, Brandon, this is my new thing. Road Trubisky is trash. Home Trubisky is God.
Okay, well, for some perspective, just an average target for a receiver is about 1.47. Half PPR points. For a deep target, it's 1.98. And for a red zone target, it's 2.23. So deep targets do add, you know, per target efficiency. So now I can move on and talk about the big games from the receivers. Allen Robinson returned for this one. He had 8 targets, 133 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He had a pair of end zone targets in this one. Anthony Miller still was able to generate 112 yards on his 6 targets. He also scored. Tariq Cohen had 7 targets, but just 29 yards. It's kind of hard to average out, you know, factor out who's been in, who's been hurt, who's been healthy for the Bears. But we do know that in games where, you know, actual individual players have been healthy, Allen Robinson has just a 21% target share and 28% of the air yards, according to airyards.com. So I think that I'm still a little bit more lukewarm on stacking any of these particular options with Trubisky, even though I like Trubisky plenty as a standalone play. The running back carries here were split 11 for Jordan Howard, 7 for Tariq Cohen. The snaps were 54% for Cohen, 53% for Jordan Howard. Howard still has a 69% carry share and 57% of the red zone carries over the past 5 games. Trubisky did have a rushing touchdown in this one from inside the 5. So that's a bit problematic if you want to play Jordan Howard. I really can't get there at this point. It's Tariq Cohen or bust for me in this backfield. And he actually leads, Cohen leads the team with a 21% target share over the past 5 games. So again, I'm high on Trubisky, just still hesitant to load up on any particular stacking partner. And they host the Vikings defense Sunday night in week 11, and the Vikings defense is trending back up pretty quickly. So just keep that in mind if you're playing slates that include that game. The Lions could be without Marvin Jones moving forward. That's hard to tell. He injured his knee, got limited to 62% of the snaps, but didn't comment on the severity of his injury. That led to a target surge for Kenny Golladay, which we'll talk about in a second because I need to talk first about Kerryon Johnson. Johnson played through an ankle injury that, you know, kept him limited throughout the week in terms of practice, but he dominated. He played 70.5% of the snaps after playing 59%, 81 and 56 the past 3 games. So his, you know, his snaps are up overall, even with the return of Theo Riddick. He had 20 touches, including 6 targets, 89 total yards, 2 touchdowns. Did score on the goal line, but had only 1 of 3 carries from inside the 5. They tried to give it to LeGarrette Blount first, but he has 3 red zone targets in the past 2 games. So arrow certainly pointing up for Kerryon Johnson, even with the injury and Theo Riddick back. Kenny Golladay got peppered. He had 13 targets, 78 yards, and a touchdown. He had 4 of the 6 deep targets. Again, we can contribute some of that to the Marvin Jones injury. Jones, again, left after 62% of the snaps. He as in Jones, had 7 targets. Riddick also had 7 targets. In 2 games without Golden Tate, Kenny Golladay has a 22% target share, albeit on an uneven 4 and 13 targets in those 2. Marvin Jones and Theo Riddick are both at 19.7%. Kerryon Johnson is at 14.5% of the targets. Golladay in this one played 95% of the snaps. It's not uncommon for him to push for 90%+ of the snaps. And if Marvin Jones and Golden Tate are out, then Kenny Golladay probably going to get fed double-digit targets because they don't have really any other option other than Kerryon Johnson and Theo Riddick.
I think Johnson's usage here was, and you touched on this too, but I think it was super encouraging because they were down 12 with like a minute left, and that is a situation where you would assume Theo Riddick would be playing, but Johnson was on the field there, and I thought that was the best thing I've seen from him from a usage perspective like all year, because I think that it makes him more game script independent where he will be in there even if they're down, which is encouraging for me in a spot next week where they're facing Carolina and very well could be down because Carolina at times is very good. So I kind of think I want to buy Kerryon Johnson. What do you think is a proper price for him at home against Carolina?
I mean, just with the fact that he wasn't the first option on the goal line is always going to be something that can just kill Johnson's value. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'd still pay around 7,000, if not closer to like 73, but I'm, you know, it's easy to get ahead of myself because I like Kerryon Johnson.
Sure.
What about you?
I think those are fair prices, but he's $6,200. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was like
okay
57, I think, this week. I don't remember because I
thought he was like 64.
He was 64 the week before that. But he's 62 this week.
All these weeks blend together at this point.
Yeah. Also, according to Pro Football Focus, Johnson played three slots in the snap. Or three. Good job, Jim. Three snaps in the slot, which is a season high. He also tied a season high with four snaps out wide. And he's done that both weeks with Theo Riddick back. So I kind of think they've realized he's hashtag good at football. And are just
Riddick played 58% of the snaps in this one too. And again, Johnson played 71%. So they'll use both. And if Marvin Jones is out, you know.
Riddick will just play more out wide. So
or Johnson. Either or Johnson. One.
Yeah, exactly. You're totally right. So I think $6,200 is a tremendous price, and I will happily pay that. So let's move on here to the Jaguars and the Colts. All 29 of the Colts' points came in the first half. Couldn't do anything in the second half because they abandoned the pass and couldn't run the football. I think they should have gone back to the pass, but they didn't. Andrew Luck, though, was outstanding. The Jaguars are banged up in the secondary, so keep that in mind. But Luck has 17.34 expected points as a passer, which is almost twice as many as any other quarterback has gotten against him all year. Like, they played Patrick Mahomes, but Luck almost doubled his expected point total. Luck is balling out right now. This offense is finally healthy. We should be pretty psyched about everybody tied him going forward because Luck, back to where he was before, and I almost even better than that because his offensive line is better and the talent around him better as well. Marlon Mack didn't do a ton. He was clearly the lead back, though, again. He had 12 of 16 running back carries while adding two targets. Nyheim Hines had three carries and four targets. Mack played 60% of the snaps, right in line with where he was before their bye week. Hines played 36%. We've yet to see Mack in a negative game script this year, but they're also playing super well, and they're generating positive game scripts. So I'm still on Mack going forward. That was a disappointing efficiency game for him, though. Ryan Grant made his return. Eric Ebron is healthy, so things were a bit spread out for the targets. Ebron scored three times on three targets with a rush attempt. So four total opportunities and three touchdowns. He played just 38% of the snaps. That's fewer than Mo Alie-Cox. Jack Doyle had three targets, one of which was in the red zone. He played 87% of the snaps. Alie-Cox got a red zone target in a touchdown with four total targets. So Ebron's basically going to play snaps only when they're in close. He did have a long target too. So he's not my style of play because there is no floor here, but he's always going to be a threat to vulture a touchdown, which is annoying with Doyle. I'm going to talk to you guys about these guys later because I'm super confused about them. T.Y. Hilton had a tough matchup, but usage was pretty solid. He had seven targets, which is the most he has had since his injury. He had two deep targets and one in the red zone. The Colts are at home against the Titans and Dolphins the next 2 weeks, so Hilton will be very much in play for both of those games. This is the first game back for Leonard Fournette, and his usage was pretty solid. He had 24 carries, even though they trailed by 13 points at halftime and were in catch-up mode all game. He also had five targets, two of which were in the red zone. Fournette's snap rate was 52%, but this was his first game back and one that's set up for more TJ Yeldon usage. Fournette kind of got used like a workhorse, got some passing down work. We will play Name That Price with him in just a second. At wide receiver, Dante Moncrief had the long touchdown and just he had a long touchdown in the revenge game, but also just 4 of 38 targets. D.D. Westbrook had 10 targets. James O'Shaughnessy and T.J. Yeldon had six targets. So Moncrief is still the top guy here, but there's really no way to predict who will pop from a usage perspective each game. It does help that Moncrief and Westbrook have pulled away from the other receivers, but still a tough scenario. If I'm going here, I favor Moncrief, but my level of conviction in that is just pretty low. And also a reminder here that Keelan Cole is out, basically. DJ Chark played ahead of him again, but his snap rate was also just 59%. So it's basically just Moncrief and Westbrook for me here. First, Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Colts tight ends. How much, like, what do you do here? I just want to give you the floor. What do you do with these freaking tight ends?
I'll still play some Jack Doyle because he's going to play a lot of snaps, but it's just back to what we saw the first 2 weeks, where Doyle played like 93% of the snaps in both games, but they gave Eric Ebron all the red zone and end zone targets. That's pretty much what we saw again this week. Although Doyle was about, you know, he was a yard away from a touchdown, which would have given him 11.1 FanDuel points. And that's, I guess maybe 11.2 if you get given that extra yard, but I mean, that would have been fine. He just was, you know, at 5.1 because he didn't score. So you're going to take what you get, but I'm still going to prioritize Jack Doyle over Eric Ebron just because of the snaps. Although I'm probably just going to try to avoid this situation because I peaked and I saw Eric Ebron's price. So I want to ask you what you're willing to pay for someone playing those that snap rate.
Like 5,000, honestly.
Say 6,000. Which, like, I get.
No, I get it. Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. But why? I just can't keep realistic. Yeah. Did you see T.Y. Hilton's while you were peeking?
I did not.
He's 68, so I'm going to have way too much again. It's going to be bad, but I'm going to do
it. Yeah, at home in that dome. He's always better there.
Marlon Mack is 7,000, so, like, I'm just going to have far too many game stacks this game because they're all so cheap. Andrew Luck is 78. Like, I want all of that, and I'm going to use all of that. And it's going to be like a 13-10 game, and I'm going to cry my eyes out like on Monday. But, like, that's fine. Name that price for Leonard Fournette based on what you saw on Sunday. 52% snap rate, but a lot of usage. He is at home, I believe, yes, against Pittsburgh next week.
I mean, I don't know. He's still like a 7,000 type of option. What are you thinking?
All right. Both players at home, same matchup, Leonard Fournette or David Johnson. Would you rather
David Johnson?
By how much? Is it a full tier of separation or are they in the same tier for you?
I would put, like, Johnson at the top of the tier and Fournette at, like, the bottom of the same tier.
Okay. I think that's fair. I would say he's closer to 75 for me, and he is 76. Whoops. He went up. All right. So that's fair.
So now you're still going to play him.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. There are a lot of good running backs for next week, I think. So I will see how it shakes out.
Fournette gets that Steelers narrative. Like, his two biggest games ever have come against the Steelers.
Well, I'm aware. Believe me.
I know you know the narratives.
We're on top of this. Don't you worry your little heart there. Let's move on here to the Falcons and the Browns. Brandon, Baker Mayfield, just tremendous. I love him. Talk me through this game.
Yeah, between Baker and Mariota, I don't know how you've been able to contain yourself for this podcast.
That makes up for Trubisky and Keselowski winning me money.
So Baker said that he, after the game, that he woke up feeling dangerous, and, you know, that's just a baller quote. That's a baller quote, but I mean, he sure was. He threw only 20 times, but had 17 completions, 216 yards, but 3 touchdowns. Just 3 deep attempts, including Mayfield himself. 10 different Browns had a target. So that's kind of problematic whenever you have just 21 overall attempts here. Only Jarvis Landry with 5, Duke Johnson with 4, and Nick Chubb with 3 had more than 2 targets. So hard to love the target shares whenever the volume's that low. Over the past 3 games, though, Jarvis Landry still has a 25% target share, 32% of the red zone and deep targets combined. It's kind of hard for me to look to anyone other than Landry as a pass catcher in this offense, but it is worth noting that he was outsnapped by Antonio Callaway 39-36. Nick Chubb, being awesome, sapped the volume and value and volume for the pass game. 23.
I like that as a combo. I like it.
23 overall running back carries here, and Chubb had 20 of them. He also had those 3 targets, as I mentioned. Obviously had that 92-yard rushing touchdown. Ended up totaling 209 yards and 2 scores. Played a season-high 79% snap rate, limiting Duke Johnson to 32% of the snaps in a positive script. Johnson, again, had those 4 targets, but did score against that very generous pass defense against the Falcons. So I'm very eager to buy in on Nick Chubb. I'm not going to be alone in that. But seeing Duke Johnson be phased out is a little bit problematic for me. They have a bye in week 11. But, you know, overall, Baker Mayfield's been showing us things, as has Chubb. And those are definitely my two priorities for this offense. The Falcons played from behind, and they had 54 dropbacks compared to 19 rushes here. On 52 actual pass attempts, Matt Ryan generated 330 yards, two touchdowns, just 6.3 yards per attempt. It was his first game since week one, that opener against the Eagles on Thursday night, with fewer than 7.5 yards per attempt. Still got to 20.5 FanDuel points because of the volume. So still, it was actually something, you know, it was overall okay for me, for Matt Ryan, because he was on the road against the still pretty tough defense. Julio Jones tied for a team high 11 targets here, had 7 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown. He had 3 of the 4 deep targets and 3 of the 11 red zone targets. It's his first 3
red zone, Brandon.
Yes, he had 3 red zone targets, and those were his first.
Like his own red zone, like the team trying to score red zone, not as in like the other one.
Yes. Huh. His own red zone is generally where he has to generate his touchdowns from. So those were his first red zone looks since week one when he had 3. So we can't necessarily buy in that it's a thing now, but he did.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. I have a tinfoil hat thing, so go ahead.
Okay.
We'll talk about this after, though.
All right. So over the past 4 games, which coincides with Devontae Freeman's injury, Jones has a 28.5% target share and 58% of the deep targets. He's just good. Austin Hooper had 11 targets here, 4 of which were red zone targets over those past 4 games. Hooper's at 17% of the targets, second most on the team, including 33% of the red zone targets to tie him for the team lead. Mohamed Sanu had 8 targets here, and he was the only other Falcon with more than 5. But again, in that split without Devontae Freeman, or I guess since, you know, more specifically when Devontae Freeman got put on IR, both Sanu and Ridley are below a 14% target share, which pushes them out of comfort level for me in DFS. In the backfield here, Tevin Coleman had 11 of the 15 running back carries, and since that injury to Freeman, Coleman's at a 58% running back carry share, 55% of the red zone carries, but that's compared to 42% and 45% respectively for Ito Smith. So it's kind of a close split. Despite the difference in snap and receiving usage. Coleman did play 65% of the snaps, which was the second highest snap rate for an Atlanta back this year. He's played at least half the snaps in 8 of 9 games, so he's never the worst option. He's just hard to get overly excited about from a DFS standpoint when there are always viable alternatives. But
all right,
Atlanta does host the Cowboys on week 11. What's the conspiracy theory?
All right, so because Matt Ryan has been like stupid efficient in the red zone this year, I feel like defenses need to play them differently, and that could free up more Julio Jones. Like, they've been good enough in the red zone where I think they need to change up as opposed to just loading up dudes on Julio Jones. And I think that's going to lead to more favorable coverage and more targets for Julio in the red zone, which could mean we have continued touchdown production for Julio Jones. So name that price for Julio week 11 at home against Dallas.
Like 92.
I would not pay 92. I don't think
I wouldn't, but that was my guess. I would be more comfortable at about 88.
He's 87. I think that's fair.
Okay.
I think that they avoided the overreaction, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And like with his floor, given the yardage he has, like he's had 100 yards receiving in 4 straight games and 5 of 6. And that's such 90, a good floor.
And he was 96 before that, so almost 6 of 7.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. So, and he had 169 in the opener. So, like, I think he's a really good play at 87. I will totally take that. Like, I'm not prioritizing wide receivers, especially on a slate where I think there will be some really good running back plays. But, like, if I've got the money, I think that's awesome. So I'm fully okay with that. So Julio Jones, really fun. We'll talk more about the Browns coming out of their bye week for sure. But let's move on here to the Chargers and the Raiders. Melvin Gordon's awesome usage just keeps on getting cemented here. He had 18 carries and 6 targets in this game, and that is with the Chargers throwing just 26 times in the games that Melvin has played. He has 21% of the team's targets and 33% of the red zone targets. He does not get as many carries as Todd Gurley, but his target numbers are higher. So I think that I'd probably put Melvin as the number two fantasy running back the rest of the way, given this offense and how good it's been. I don't think that's a super hot take either. Keenan Allen had another solid game from a usage perspective. He had 9 targets, 2 were deep, and 1 was in the red zone. He is up to 28% of the overall targets, 25% of the deep targets, and 17% of the red zone targets. With Mike Williams' snap rate going down, it was below 50% for the second consecutive week. Keenan is getting more high leverage targets, and I'm feeling a lot better about him than I was before. Tyrell Williams, 6 targets, 2 of those were deep, and 1 was in the red zone. He has just 13% of the targets for the full year, but he has multiple deep targets in 4 straight and 31% of the overall deep targets. He is overpriced in general, but I will use him now in spots where I have to throw a bit, whereas I was pretty hesitant to do so before. Got 3 games to sample here on the Raiders since the Amari Cooper trade, and Jared Cook has 20% of the overall targets. Jalen Richard has 22%. Brandon LaFell has 16%. Martavis Bryant injured his knee, but he wasn't a big factor here to begin with. So they're spread out targets and a bad offense that wants to lose. It's a pretty hard pass for me. Doug Martin had a season high 16 carries, but they're all super hollow. I would not worry about that, and I would not use any Raiders in DFS unless you want to be very frustrated and lose money. So Brandon, let's talk about the Chargers here. The Chargers at home against Denver next week. How high is too high of a price for you on Melvin Gordon? I'm not going to ask you like what you'd pay for him, but like how high is too high for you?
Too high, probably like 9,300.
Okay. I was going to say 96.
And my instinct was actually like 95, but
yeah. Like if Gurley's going to be like 10-9 still, then I think 96 is where I started to be like, eh, maybe not Melvin. But Melvin,
yeah, on that particular slate, that is kind of what I was thinking.
He's 87.
Oh, okay. So, never mind. Okay. Yeah.
Like, let's go. I think that's totally, totally viable, and I'm fully okay with paying that. Let's move on here to the Dolphins and the Packers. Brandon Aaron Jones finally showed his ceiling, and it is oh so sweet.
Yep. It's Aaron Jones' season. Steady 31-12 win for the Packers. Aaron Jones was just kind of got fed here. 15 carries, 145 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, and another 5 targets for 27 yards, which is very, very promising for someone like Jones to get 5 targets. Played 74% of the snaps, which is the first time a Packers running back has played even 62% in a game this season. Since a snap, like a spike in snap rate 3 games ago, he has 71% of the carries and 75% of the red zone rushes for this team, as well as 11 targets, which works out to be a 12% share. So I'm pretty much all in on Jones. I know I'm not alone in that, but really easy to buy in. Aaron Rodgers didn't have to overextend himself in this game. Threw 28 times for 199 yards, 2 touchdowns. It was his first game with fewer than 259 yards passing this year. Either way, still pretty nice to see that he had a clear hierarchy in targets this week without Randall Cobb. 7 targets went to Devontae Adams. Both touchdowns went to Adams, and both end zone targets went to Adams, or at least Adams had 2 end zone targets, that is. 7 targets went to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and 5 to Jones. Pretty clear distribution for targets there, and only Equanimeous St. Brown with 3 had more than 2. In terms of snaps, Valdez-Scantling actually led in snap rate at 95% after having played 81% last week. Adams played 93% for some context. So it's pretty clear that MVS gets a boost without Cobb. Jimmy Graham played his lowest snap rate of the year at 68%. He's been below 80% in 2 of the past 3, a span in which he has 11.7% of the targets. He's hard to pay for, depending on what his price is, but he's usually overpriced. Does get a revenge game. As the Packers head to Seattle in week 11 on Thursday Night Football. There's not a whole lot to say about the Dolphins, who haven't scored a touchdown in 2 straight games. Brock Osweiler threw 37 times for 213 yards. Jakeem Grant aggravated an Achilles injury in this one. Devontae Parker also got limited to 66% of the snaps after playing 100% and 90% the past two games. But he still got heavily targeted. He had 11 targets to lead the team. Danny Amendola had 10 targets. So they were the only two Miami players with more than three targets. So, I mean, if you must, they're both in play. They're the only two options really in play for the pass catchers. Each has at least a 24% target share the past three games, which coincides with Parker's, having Devontae Parker need to, suit up and be on the field. And he's actually got an elite 43% of the combined deep and red zone targets. Again, Corey Davis leads the league right now at 44.7% on the full year, but these targets are coming from Brock Osweiler. In the backfield, Frank Gore had 16 total touches, for 102 yards. Kenyon Drake had 10 opportunities for 38 yards. Gore actually out-targeted Drake 3-2, but Drake out-snapped him 50% to 43%. So I don't know how you figure that out. Over the past five, Gore has a 62% carry share. Drake's at 36%. Gore is also getting more than half of the red zone touches, but I can't play either in DFS. And Miami's heading into a bye in week 11, which I think they surely need.
Yeah. We can't play Name That Price and Aaron Jones because he's not on the main slate. So let me ask you a question. Has he shown enough to you the past couple of weeks where you will use him in any game script?
Yeah, I think so. It's not even game script now. It's more about just the price. Relative to where he is compared to the other backs. So it's not matchup, it's not game script, it's the price.
And he had five targets, which is the most he has had all year, and I love that. So would you rather Aaron Jones or Tevin Coleman in the same, both at home, both
Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones.
Marlon Mack or Aaron Jones?
Aaron Jones.
Joe Mixon or Aaron Jones?
With or without AJ Green, I guess.
That's the right question. If AJ Green is out, I go Aaron Jones. If AJ Green is in, it's very close. Probably
not. Yeah, that's a weird situation, but yeah. They need AJ Green.
Aaron Jones or Leonard Fournette?
Aaron Jones.
Okay. So you think he's in the same tier as DJ Fournette?
Yeah, I mean, you have to contextualize that he's at least on an offense that can score points. And
exactly.
I don't always trust the Jaguars to score points.
I 100% agree with that. And I think that he is also in that tier for me. So we're pretty high. I know. Again, like you said, we're not alone here, but it's legit. It's okay to buy in. It's okay to get excited about a really fun player. And we're going to do that. So Aaron Jones.
Yeah, it's almost like fantasy football is allowed to be fun.
I wouldn't go that far, Brandon. I wouldn't, because Cooper Kupp tore his ACL. That's the immediate rebuttal. Potentially tearing his ACL. Let's move on here. The Seahawks and the Rams, that's the big story, despite the Rams getting a big win. But that stinks, man. Cooper Kupp's pretty fun to watch. This offense is fun. Kupp had eight targets, so his usage is pretty big here. If we go back to the two full games that Kupp missed, Brandon Cooks had 23% of the targets and Robert Woods had 25%. Todd Gurley had 21%, which is actually a pretty good chunk higher than his season-long total. So I know it's not super like point A to point B to like go Cooper Kupp being out benefits Todd Gurley, but it actually does benefit Todd Gurley. Cooks got a lot of deep work in those games, and Woods worked in the slots. We should expect that going forward as well, but it is a slight downgrade for this offense with Cooper Kupp being out. Hopefully he's able to be good to go for next year. Todd Gurley had 16 carries and four targets in a neutral game script. Again, the targets should go up with Kupp missing time. Just keep buying Gurley stock while you can. I think that I have no concerns about him at all, and he is still worth his price. The Seahawks actually had to come from behind here, but they still threw just 26 total times. A big part of that was how effective they were rushing the football. Rashad Penny had a huge touchdown. He had 12 carries. Mike Davis had 11 carries to go with his six targets. Penny did not have any targets. Even with Chris Carson out, they found a way to split carries in the backfield. Until someone emerges, I am fine with missing out on any random big games that pop up for this backfield. Perhaps the most important rusher in this game was actually Russell Wilson. He had 9 carries for 92 yards. He had not had more than 6 carries or 41 yards the entire season before this game. He doubled the yardage total, increased his carry total by 50%. He added, if he could add rushing, that could make him fantasy relevant despite not having heavy volume. He won't get those carries if they're ahead because a lot of them are on scrambles. So we can probably target Russell only in negative or neutral game script, but it was at least encouraging to see him run the football a bit more. There were 23 total targeted throws. They were still pretty split. Tyler Lockett had 6 targets. Doug Baldwin had 5. David Moore had 3. Since the bye week, Lockett and Baldwin are at 16% of the targets. David Moore and Nick Vanette both have 18%. Lockett has 31% of the deep targets, so I will go his way if they are forced to throw. He's decent for game stacks, but that's pretty much it here. Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Rams, though. We kind of saw what we should expect from Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods, and we talked about A.J. Green and his injury being a downgrade for the Bengals offense. Do you worry at all about this Rams offense without Cooper Kupp?
Yeah, a little bit, but I just don't know if it's enough to get me not to play them. Thankfully, we get a week where they're not on the main slate, so we don't have to guess. And we
I think
can
they have a bye after that, too.
Huh. So they're going to be off the radar for quite a while.
So are the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That's tough. Tough stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, they can go forgotten. So it's going to depend on that price, but, I mean, they're still tied to one of the best offenses in football. So, you know, I'm okay with them. It's not like I'm going to, you know, go so far as to say that I won't play either of them.
Right. Brandon Cooks has 4 100-yard receiving games this year, but they've all come in games that Kupp has played. So I like Cooks a lot, but that does worry me a little bit. So
yeah.
Keep an eye on that for sure, but I do think that Gurley gets a boost.
Yeah, we saw Robert Woods play a lot out of the slot whenever Kupp's been out before. So
I think he gets an upgrade because of the safety.
Yeah, his floor goes up, mm-hmm. but the whole offense's ceiling seems to kind of go down.
Yeah, not a ton, but enough.
Yeah, just enough.
Let's move on here and close up with the Cowboys and the Eagles. Eagles are confusing, man. We now have 2 games of sample with Amari Cooper, so talk me through what you saw with the Cowboys in this game.
Yeah, kind of ugly, mm-hmm. but like defensive. It's hard to tell sometimes if it's good defense or bad offense, but it's just an ugly game to start. But the Cowboys rode Ezekiel Elliott to glory in the end. Elliott had 25 touches for 187 yards, 2 touchdowns in this one. Played 90% of the snaps, handled all 5 carries from inside the 10, had 2 of the 3 targets from inside the 10. He has just an insane workload, and it really, I mean, he's in a tier with, you know, the other elite backs, and that's not a surprise to anybody, but his usage and snaps have just been great. And he plays at the Falcons in week 11, so sure thing. Dak Prescott overall has been better of late. 36 attempts in this one for 270 yards. He's had at least 7 yards per attempt in 5 of his past 6 games, which league average is about 7.5. So not great, but still better than what we've seen from Prescott, who had been struggling for almost a full calendar year now. And he also has at least 6 carries in 4 of his past 5 games. So the arrow is pointing up on Dak Prescott from my perspective. We also benefit from having him feed Amari Cooper. Cooper had 10 targets in this game, so he has a 29% share in his 2 games with the team. Only Ezekiel Elliott at 19% of the targets is above 15% as well, so it's been concentrated usage for this team. Cooper also has 6 red zone targets already with the team in 2 games, a 33% share in that 2-game sample. He had 10 red zone targets last year and 4 as a Raider this season. Again, he's up to 6 already in 2 games with the Cowboys. Cooper played 80% of the snaps this week after 85% in week 9. But for some context, no Cowboys receiver has played more than 85% of the snaps in a game yet this year. Again, at Atlanta in week 11, I'm pretty into this offense. For the Eagles, they threw 44 times and ran 16 times. It was a weird script for them. Carson Wentz got to 360 yards and 2 touchdowns on those attempts. And he force-fed a particular pass catcher by the name of Zach Ertz, who had 16 targets, 14 catches, 145 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Over the past 5 games, he has a 28% target share and 32% of the red zone targets. The team didn't feature Golden Tate who had 4 targets compared to 8 for Alshon Jeffrey and 7 for Nelson Agholor. Tate was actually 4th among receivers in snap rate. Alshon Jeffrey played 97%. Nelson Agholor played 89%. Jordan Matthews played 60%. Golden Tate played just 29% of the snaps, 18 in total. The backfield's useless here. They all played between Wendell Smallwood, Josh Adams, and Corey Clement played between 29 and 34% of the snaps. So you can't use any of that, even against the Saints in Week 11.
So I want to talk to you about the Eagles first, since you just talked about them. I think because this game was off of a bye week and Golden Tate didn't – like, they did actively try to get the ball in his hands, but, like, the usage wasn't too bad. Despite an extra mouth being in the equation, do you still feel good about Alshon – like, I know you feel good about Ertz. I don't have to ask about him. But do you still feel good about Alshon Jeffrey heading into next week?
I don't feel bad, but I certainly don't feel good, if that makes
sense. That's kind of where I'm at too, though.
It's not like I wouldn't use Alshon. Again, it's DFS.
The game environment is perfect, so I'm going to use it.
So name that price for Alshon Jeffrey. I feel like the Eagles have 7,000?
Yeah.
He is 73.
I think that's fair, given the game environment, and I will still pay it.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. Name that price for Ertz, though. Like, it'd be pretty high.
So, I mean, I paid $8,000 for Kelsey this week.
Yeah.
I'd pay $8,000 for Ertz if, you know, provided I have the money.
Yeah. He's 76, and I think that's fair again. So, like, I think that's okay. And I'm still in on this offense. I'm still in on Jeffrey, still in on Ertz. Probably not going to Agholor. The snap rate was still good. He got some targets here, but
he had 3 deep targets for what that's worth, but he's been so inefficient this year.
It's been weird. Yeah, it's been a crazy little regression there. Okay, so on the road in Atlanta, are you going to use more Ezekiel Elliott or more Amari Cooper there?
Zeke.
Really?
I mean, I'm going to play a lot of both of them.
So, like, my concern is that we did just see a couple weeks ago that Zeke can still turn to dust in negative game script, and that worries me. I know he's getting targets, but I'm worried about
Washington games.
Yeah,
this is going to be different.
It is. No, you're right. But I think because of that, I can't make Zeke a focal point of my builds.
Oh,
and that's still like a concern for me. I guess I can't do it with Cooper because he's a wide receiver and he's a volatile wide receiver. But what do you think is a fair price for Cooper based on what you've seen?
So with that red zone involvement and getting about 30% of the targets in 2 games in a great matchup, I think that I could pay up to about 7,000 for him with some confidence.
Yeah, 100% agree. He is $6,600.
What would you pay for Zeke? Because you're more skeptical than I am.
So I was willing to pay $8,000 for David Johnson. I would pay $8,200 for Zeke.
He's 84. I'm paying that. I have no problems.
Okay, I would pay that too. Given the, again, Atlanta's, I'm going to stack that game. So
Atlanta's given up 7.2 yards per play over the past 4 weeks. That's the highest in football. The Bengals are close, but I mean, they just can't stop anybody.
Deion Jones is eligible to come off of injured reserve this week or next week.
I don't know, but I don't care. I'm playing Ezekiel Elliott.
Let me try to find this out. Sorry. Yeah, he's eligible to return week 11. So,
my gosh,
it's not a huge downgrade, but it is something to consider.
Just do yourself a favor and click on the running back tab and just go top to bottom of the top running back plays. We're going to have a lot to talk about on Thursday.
They're all 8,000 or higher.
It's Alvin Kamara, Saquon, Melvin Gordon, McCaffrey, Zeke, Connor, David Johnson, Fournette, Mixon. There are going to be so many options.
This is with no Gurley.
Yeah.
How? And this is with no Dalvin Cook, who would be my favorite play if he were on the main slate, but he's not. Oh, man. All right. I'm pretty pumped for week 11, man. I think we got some good takeaways. We got some exciting players who are trending up. And I'm ready. Let's just do the preview pod right now, man. Let's go. I'm ready. There are some good shootouts this week too.
Yeah. We probably could just roll through. probably would behoove me to go ahead and make those decisions now before I, talk myself into weird things. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. So I think a pretty solid week for takeaways. Exciting players trending up. Marcus Mariota is back to being Marcus Mariota. So everything's great. Baker Mayfield's a dangerous man. I'm happy. I'm pretty happy about all this and how things have gone down. Quick reminder, PGA pod tomorrow, NASCAR pod. Final one of the year for the championship race in Homestead is tomorrow, or Wednesday, I should say. And then the Week 11 preview podcast is on Thursday. You can find that on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, other places I'm probably forgetting. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts by searching for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast. See, Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcasts. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Hopefully week 10 was a successful one for you, and we look forward to getting you set for week number 11 on Thursday. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.